have pioneered some extraordinary products that we will explore and advocate throughout this book. And the vast majority of people in the financial services industry care intensely for their clients, and more often than not, they are doing what they believe to be the best thing. Unfortunately, many don't also understand how the house reaps profits whether the client wins or not. They are doing the best they can for their clients with the knowledge, training, and the tools, products, they have been provided. But the system isn't set up for your broker to have endless options and complete autonomy in finding what's best for you. And this could prove costly. Giving up a disproportionate amount of your potential returns to fees is just one of the pitfalls you must avoid if you plan on winning the game. And here is the best news yet. The game is still winnable. In fact, it's more than winnable, it's exciting as hell. Yes, there are major challenges and more pitfalls you must avoid, but consider how far we have come. Today, with the click of a button and a minimal charge, you can invest in just about anything you want anywhere in the world you want. It's easier than it's ever been to do pretty well, said James Clunan in a recent Wall Street Journal article. Clunan is founder of the nonprofit American Association of Individual Investors. You just have to decide to do the right thing. Heck, just 35 years ago you had to spend hours in a public library or write away to a company just to see its financial statements. Brokerage costs and mutual fund fees were outlandish, tax rates were larcenous, wrote Jason Zweig in his Wall Street Journal article. Even when stocks make you nervous, count your blessings. Aside from high-frequency traders, technology has made the world of investing a much more efficient space for all of us. And this fits perfectly with the millennial generation, which wouldn't accept anything less. For us, it's all about convenience, exclaimed Emily, my personal assistant, who is a straight-down-the-fairway millennial. There is no tolerance for slow or inefficient. We truly want everything to be at the touch of a button. We order everything on Amazon, we lift one finger, and it's done. I can stream a movie on Netflix. I can get a car registration online. I can buy stocks online. I can do my presentation online. This morning I took a picture of my check and had it in my bank account by 6. I didn't even have to get out of my pajamas. The house has the edge. Steve Wynn, the billionaire gambling mogul credited with transforming Las Vegas into the entertainment capital of the world, is one of my dearest friends. The casinos he's built are considered to be some of the most magnificent playgrounds in the world. Through it all, he's made his fortune from one simple truth: the house has the edge. But by no means does he have a guaranteed victory. On any given night, a high-rolling gambler can take millions out of Steve's pocket. And they can also leave if his house doesn't completely captivate them. On the other hand, nearly all mutual fund companies have a stacked deck. They are the ultimate casino. They've captured you, you're going nowhere, and they are guaranteed revenue whether you win or not. Twice burned. After 2008, when the US stock market lost more than 37%, the financial world was completely changed for most Americans. Even 5 years later, a survey from Prudential Financial showed that 44% of American investors still say they would never put their money in the stock market again, while 58% say they lost faith in the market. But the insiders are still in the game. Why? Because they know better. They know the right way to play the game. They know that today there are powerful tools and strategies that have never existed before. Get this. Today you can use a tool, issued and backed by one of the largest banks in the world, that will give you 100% principal protection guaranteed by its balance sheet and allow you to participate in 75% to 90% of the upside of the market, the S&P 500, without being capped. That is not a misprint. You can participate in up to 90% of the upside, but if the market collapses, you still get back 100% of your money. Sounds too good to be true? And if a product like this did exist, you would have already heard of it, right? Wrong. The reason? In the past, to even hear about this, you had to be in the top 1% of the 1%. These are not retail solutions, where they sit on the shelf. These are custom designed for those with enough money to partake. This is just one example of how, as an insider, you'll soon know the new rules of how to achieve wealth with minimal risk. Risk comes from not knowing what you're doing. Warren Buffett. The road less traveled. The journey ahead is one that requires your full participation. Together we are going to climb this mountain called financial freedom. It's your personal Mount Everest. It won't be easy, and it will require preparation. You don't head up Everest without a very clear understanding of the dangers that lie ahead. Some are known, and some could sneak up on you like a violent storm. So before we set foot on the mountain, we must fully grasp what's on the path before us. One false step could mean the difference between wondering how you will pay next month's mortgage and an abundant life, free of financial stress. We can't ask someone to climb it for us, but we also can't do it alone. We need a guide who has our best interests at heart. The pinnacle. The core concept of successful investing is simple. Grow your savings to a point at which the interest from your investments will generate enough income to support your lifestyle without having to work. Eventually you reach a tipping point at which your savings will hit a critical mass. This simply means that you don't have to work anymore unless you choose to, because the interest and growth being generated by your account gives you the income you need for your life. This is the pinnacle we are climbing toward. The great news is that if you become an insider, today there are new and unique solutions and strategies that will accelerate your climb and even protect you from sliding backward. But before we explore these solutions in more depth, let's map out our journey with more clarity. There are two phases to your investing game: the accumulation phase, in which you are socking away money for growth, and the decumulation, during which you are withdrawing income. The journey up the mountain will represent our accumulation phase, with the goal of reaching the pinnacle or critical mass. The goal is to stay on top of the mountain as long as we can. To take in the views and breathe in the fresh air of freedom and accomplishment. There will be many hurdles, obstacles, and, if you're not alert, even lies, that will prevent you from reaching the peak. To ensure our best chance of success, we will flush these out in the pages to come. And when we enter the second act of our life, when it's time to enjoy what we made, we will have the freedom to work only if we want to. At this stage, we will ski down the mountain and enjoy ourselves. Spending time with the ones we love, building our legacy, and making a difference. It's during this phase that we will eliminate the number one fear of baby boomers, the fear of outliving our money. This second phase is rarely discussed by the asset management industry, which is focused on keeping money invested. It's not about having some arbitrary amount of money in your account on some given day, exclaimed Dr. Jeffrey Brown, professor of finance at the University of Illinois and consultant to the U.S. Treasury and the World Bank. I think a lot of people are going to get to retirement and suddenly wake up and realize, you know what? I did a fairly good job. I have all this money sitting here, but I don't know how long I am going to live, and I don't know what my investment returns are going to be, and I don't know what inflation is going to be. What do I do? After I read one of his recent Forbes columns, I called Dr. Brown to see if he would be willing to sit down and share specific solutions for investors of all shapes and sizes. We'll hear from Dr. Brown on how to create income for life, and even how to make it tax-free in his interview in Section 5, Upside Without the Downside, Create a Lifetime Income Plan. And who better to outline the solution than the man who is not only a top academic expert, but was also one of only 7 people appointed by the President of the United States to the Social Security Advisory Board. Break the chains. In the words of David Swensen, one of the most successful institutional investors of our time, to have unconventional success, you can't be guided by conventional wisdom. Let's shatter the top 9 financial myths that misguide the masses, and, more importantly, uncover the new rules of money, the truths that will set you financially free. Let's start with the biggest myth of all. Chapter 2.1. Myth 1, the $13T lie, invest with U.S. We'll beat the market. The goal of the non-professional should not be to pick winners. Neither he nor his helpers can do that, but should rather be to own a cross-section of businesses that in aggregate are bound to do well. A low-cost S&P 500 index fund will achieve this goal. Warren Buffett, when you look at the results on an after-fee, after-tax basis, over reasonably long periods of time, there's almost no chance that you end up beating the index fund. David Swensen. Financial Entertainment. When you turn on the financial news today, you can see that it is less news and more sensationalism. Talking heads debate with zeal. Stock pickers scream their hot picks of the day while sound effects smash, crash, and catching. Through our living room speakers. Reporters film live on the scene directly from the trenches of the exchange floor. The system, paid for by advertisers, breeds the feeling that maybe we are missing out. If only we had a hot tip. If only we knew the next must-own mutual fund that would surely be the five-star comet. Mutual funds are rated between 1 and 5 stars by rating authority Morningstar. Chasing returns is big business. Personal finance writer Jane Bryant Quinn once referred to this sensational hype as financial porn. Luring us into glossy pages where the centerfolds are swapped with 5-star ratings and promises of carefree walks on the beach and fishing off the dock with our grandkids. The bottom line is that advertisers are fighting to get a grasp on our money. The war for your assets rages on. So where do you put your money? Who can you trust? Who will protect you and get you the best return on your investment? These are the immediate questions that are sure to come to mind now that you've committed to becoming an investor, now that you've committed to socking away a percentage of your income. So where do most people put their money for the long haul? Usually the stock market. And the stock market has indeed been the best long-term investment over the past 100 years. As Steve Forbes pointed out at one of my financial events in Sun Valley, Idaho, in 2014, $1 million invested in stocks in 1935 is worth $2.4 billion today, if you held on. But the moment you open an IRA or participate in your 401k plan at work, there will be a jolly salesman, or sales process, telling you to park your money in a mutual fund. And by buying an actively managed mutual fund, what exactly are you buying? You are buying into the fund manager in hopes that his or her stock-picking abilities will be better than yours. A completely natural assumption, since we have insanely busy lives, and our method of picking stocks would be the equivalent of throwing darts. So we hand over our money to a 5-star actively managed mutual fund manager who by definition is actively trying to beat the market by being a better stock picker than the next guy. But few firms will discuss what is sometimes called the $13 trillion lie. That's how much money is in mutual funds. Are you ready for this? An incredible 96% of actively managed mutual funds fail to beat the market over any sustained period of time. So let's be clear. When we say beat the market as a whole, we are generally referring to a stock index. What's an index, you ask? Some of you might know, but I don't want to risk leaving anyone in the dark, so let's shed a little light. An index is simply a basket or list of stocks. The S&P 500 is an index. It's a list of the top companies by market capitalization in the United States, as selected by Standard and Poor's. Companies like Apple, Exxon, and Amazon make up the list. Each day, they measure how all 500 stocks performed, as an aggregate, and when you turn on the news at night, you hear if the market, all the stocks on the list collectively, was either up or down. So instead of buying all the stocks individually, or trying to pick the next high flyer, you can diversify and own a piece of all 500 top stocks simply by investing in a low-cost index fund that tracks or mimics the index. One single investment buys you a piece of the strength of American capitalism. In a way, you are buying into the fact that over the past 100 years, the top-tier companies have always shown incredible resiliency. Even through depressions, recessions, and world wars, they have continued to find ways to add value, grow, and drive increasing revenues. And if a company fails to keep making the grade, it falls off the list and is replaced with another top performer. The point here is that by investing in the index, you don't have to pay a professional to try picking which stocks in the index you should own. It's effectively been done for you because Standard & Poor's has selected the top 500 already. By the way, there are a number of different indexes out there. Many of us have heard of the Dow Jones Index, for example, and we will explore others soon. 10,000 options. There are 7,707 different mutual funds in the United States, but only 4,900 individual stocks, all vying for a chance to help you beat the market. But the statistic is worth repeating, 96% will fail to match or beat the market over any extended period. Is this groundbreaking news? No, not to insiders. Not to the smart money. As Ray Dalio told me emphatically, you're not going to beat the market. No one does. Only a few gold medalists. He just happens to be one of those medalists honest enough to issue the warning, don't try this at home. Even Warren Buffett, known for his incredibly unique ability to find undervalued stocks, says that the average investor should never attempt to pick stocks or time the market. In his famous 2014 letter to his shareholders, he explained that when he passes away, the money in a trust for his wife should be invested only in indexes so that she minimizes her cost and maximizes her upside. Buffett is so sure that professional stock pickers can't win over time that he was more than happy to put his money where his mouth is. In January 2008, Buffett made a $1 million wager against New York-based Protégé Partners, with the winnings going to charity. The bet? Can Protégé pick five top hedge fund managers who will collectively beat the S&P 500 index over a 10-year period? As of February 2014, the S&P 500 is up 43.8%, while the five hedge funds are up 12.5%. There are still a few years left, but the lead looks like the world's fastest man, Usain Bolt, running against a pack of Boy Scouts. Note, for those unfamiliar with what a hedge fund is, it is essentially a private closed-door fund for only high-net-worth investors. The managers can have total flexibility to bet for the market and make money when it goes up, or against the market and make money when it goes down. The facts are the facts are the facts. Industry expert Robert Arnott, founder of Research Affiliates, spent two decades studying the top 200 actively managed mutual funds that had at least $100 million under management. The results are startling. From 1984 to 1998, a full 15 years, only 8 out of 200 fund managers beat the Vanguard 500 index. The Vanguard 500, put together by founder Jack Bogle, is a mirror image of the S&P 500 index. That's less than 4% odds that you pick a winner. If you've ever played blackjack, you know the goal is to get as close to 21 without going over or busting. According to Dan and Chip Heath in their Fast Company article Made to Stick, The Myth of Mutual Funds, by way of comparison, if you get dealt two face cards in blackjack, each face card is worth 10, so now your total is 20, and your inner idiot shouts, "Hit me." You have about an 8% chance of winning. Just how badly does chasing performance hurt us? Over a 20-year period, December 31, 1993, through December 31, 2013, the S&P 500 returned an average annual return of 9.28%. But the average mutual fund investor made just over 2.54%, according to Dalbar, one of the leading industry research firms. Ouch! A nearly 80% difference. In real life, this can mean the difference between financial freedom and financial despair. Said another way, if you were the person who simply owned the S&P 500, you would have turned your $10,000 into $55,916. Whereas the mutual fund investor, who was sold on the illusion that he or she could outperform the market, ended up with only $16,386. Why the huge performance gap? Because we buy high and sell low. We follow our emotions or our broker's recommendations and jump from fund to fund, always looking for an edge. But when the market falls, when we can't take the emotional pain any longer, we sell. And when the market is up, we buy more. And more. As a famous money manager named Barton Biggs observed, a bull market is like sex. It feels best just before it ends. Wisdom of ages. At 82 years young, Bert Malkiel has lived through every conceivable market cycle and new marketing fad. When he wrote A Random Walk Down Wall Street in 1973, he had no idea it would become one of the classic investment books in history. The core thesis of his book is that market timing is a loser's game. In section 4, we will sit down and you'll hear from Bert, but for now what you need to know is that he was the first guy to come up with the rationale of an index fund, which, again, does not to try to beat the market, but simply mimics, or matches, the market. Among investors, this strategy is called indexing or passive investing. This style is contrary to active investing, in which you pay a mutual fund manager to actively make choices about which stocks to buy or sell. The manager is trading stocks actively working with hopes of beating the market. Jack Bogle, founder of the behemoth Vanguard, subsequently bet the future direction of his company on this idea by creating the first index fund. When I sat down with Jack for this book, he echoed why Vanguard has become the largest index mutual fund manager in the world. His best single rant, maximum diversification, minimal cost, and maximum tax efficiency, low turnover, trading, and low turnover cost, and no sales loads. How's that for an elevator pitch? Shortcut. Now, you might be thinking that there must be some people who can beat the market. Why else would there be $13 trillion in actively managed mutual funds? Mutual fund managers certainly have streaks where they do, in fact, beat the market. The question is whether or not they can sustain that advantage over time. But as Jack Bogle said, it all comes down to marketing. It's our human nature to strive to be faster, better, smarter than the next guy. And thus, selling a hot fund is not difficult to do. It sells itself. And when it inevitably turns cold, there will be another hot one ready to serve up. As for the 4% that do beat the market, they aren't the same 4% the next time around. Jack shared me with what he says is the funniest way to get this point across. Tony, if you pack 1,024 gorillas into a gymnasium and teach them each to flip a coin, one of them will flip heads 10 times in a row. Most would call that luck, but when that happens in the fund business, we call him a genius. And what are the odds it's the same gorilla after the next 10 flips? To quote a study from Dimensional Fund Advisors, run by 2013 Nobel Prize winning economist Eugene Fama, so who still believes markets don't work? Apparently it is only the North Koreans, the Cubans, and the active managers. For this part of the book is where anyone reading who works in the financial services industry will either nod in agreement or figure out which door they will prop open with these 600 pages. Some will even be gathering the troops to mount an attack. It's a polarizing issue, without a doubt. We all want to believe that by hiring the smartest and most talented mutual fund manager, we will achieve financial freedom more quickly. After all, who doesn't want a shortcut up the mountain? And here is the crazy thing, as much as everyone is entitled to his own opinion, nobody is entitled to his own facts. Sure, some mutual fund managers will say, we may not outperform on the upside, but when the market goes down, we can take active measures to protect you so you won't lose as much. That might be comforting if it were true. The goal in investing is to get the maximum net return for a given amount of risk, and, ideally, the lowest cost. So let's see how the fund managers did when the market was down. And 2008 is as good a place to start as any. Between 2008 and early 2009, the market had its worst one-year slide since the Great Depression, 51% from top to bottom, to be exact. The managers had plenty of time to make defensive moves. Maybe when the market was down 15%, or 25%, or 35%, they would have taken appropriate measures. Once again, the facts speak for themselves. Whether the fund manager was trying to beat the S&P Growth Index, made up of companies such as Microsoft, Qualcomm, and Google, or trying to beat the S&P Small Cap Index, made up of smaller companies such as Yelp, once again, the stock pickers fell short. According to a 2012 report titled S&P Indices vs. Active Funds Scorecard SPIVA, for short the S&P 500 Growth Index outperformed 89.9% of large-cap growth mutual funds, while the S&P 500 Small Cap 600 Growth Index outperformed 95.5% of small cap growth managers. Managers. The unicorns. Now, having made it clear that almost nobody beats the market over time, I will give one caveat. There is a tiny group of hedge fund managers who do the seemingly impossible by beating the market consistently. But they are the unicorns, the rarest of the rare. The magicians. The market wizards. Like David Einhorn of Greenlight Capital, who is up 2,287%, no, that's not a typo. Since launching his fund in 1996, and has only one negative year on his track record. But unfortunately, it doesn't do the average investor any good to know they are out there, because their doors are closed to new investors. Ray Dalio's fund, Bridgewater, hasn't accepted new investors in over 10 years, but when it did, it required a minimum investment of $100 million and $5 billion in investable assets. Gulp. Paul Tudor Jones, who hasn't lost money in over 28 years, called his investors recently and sent back $2 billion. When a hedge fund gets too big, it's harder to get in and get out of the market, harder to buy and sell its investments quickly and easily. And being slow means lower returns. Before you begin to think this is a glowing report on hedge funds, let me be clear. For the fifth year in a row, ending in 2012, the vast majority of hedge fund managers have underperformed the S&P 500. According to the financial news site Zero Hedge, in 2012 the average fund returned 8% as opposed to 16% for the S&P 500. In 2013 hedge funds returned an average of 7.4%, while the S&P 500 soared 29.6%, its best year since 1997. I am sure their wealthy clients weren't too pleased. And to add insult to injury, they usually charge 2% per year for management, take 20% of the overall profits, and the gains you do receive are often taxed at the highest ordinary income tax rates. Painful. The biggest bank in the world. No matter what aspect of life, I am always looking for the exception to the rule, as that's where outstanding tends to live. Mary Callahan Erdos fits that bill. In an industry dominated by men, she has risen to the top of the financial world. Wall Street is a place where performance speaks louder than words, and Erdos's performance has been extraordinary. Her consistent breakthrough results have led her to become the CEO of JP Morgan Asset Management, and she now oversees portfolios that total more than $2.5 trillion, yes, trillion with a T. We had a fantastic interview for this book, and she shared some profound wisdom, which we will cover in section 6. But when I brought up the studies that no manager beats the market over time, she was quick to point out that many of JP Morgan's fund managers have beaten the market, in their respective classes, over the past 10 years. Why? The example she provided didn't lose as much as the market when the market went down. This difference, she says, is what provided the edge they needed to stay ahead. Erdos and many industry experts agree that certain less developed, or emerging, markets provide opportunities for active managers to get an edge. They have the opportunity to gain an even greater advantage in frontier markets, places such as Kenya and Vietnam, where information isn't as transparent and doesn't travel as fast. Erdos says this is where a firm such as JP Morgan has massive reach and resources, and can use its on-the-ground contacts in the community to give it valuable insights in real time. According to Jack Bogle, there is no empirical basis to show that active management is more effective for all the major asset classes, large cap growth, value, core, mid cap growth, and so on. But it does appear that these frontier markets present opportunities for active management to sometimes outperform. Will they continue to outperform going forward? Only time will tell. We do know that every active manager, from Ray Dalio to JP Morgan, will be wrong at some point in their attempt to outperform. Therefore, developing a system and a proper asset allocation is crucial. We will address this in section 4. It will be up to you to evaluate them for yourself, and don't forget to take into account the fees and the taxes, which we will discuss in the next chapter. All weather. You might be reading this book in a bull market, a bear market, or a sideways market. Who knows? The point is that you need to have your investments set up to stand the test of time. An all-weather portfolio. The people I have interviewed have done well in both good times and bad. And we can all count on ups and downs in the future. Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's about learning to dance in the rain. It's about removing the fear in this area of your life, so you can focus on what matters most. When, where, and how? So what does the all-weather portfolio look like? Where do I put my money, Tony? First, you don't have to waste your time trying to pick stocks yourself or pick the best mutual fund. A portfolio of low-cost index funds is the best approach for a percentage of your investments because we don't know what stocks will be best going forward. And how cool to know that by passively owning the market, you are beating 96% of the world's expert mutual fund managers and nearly as many hedge fund managers. It's time to free yourself from the burden of trying to pick the winner of the race. As Jack Bogle told me, in investing it feels counterintuitive. The secret, don't do something, just stand there. And by becoming the market and not trying to beat it, you are on the side of progress, growth, and expansion. So far we have referred many times to the market or the S&P 500. But remember that the S&P 500 is only one of many indexes or markets. Most have heard of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. There are others, such as a commodities index, a real estate index, a short-term bond index, a long-term bond index, a gold index, and so on. How much of each to buy is critical and something we will get to in section 4. In fact, how would you like to have Ray Dalio tell you what his ideal allocation would be? The strategy he shares in the pages ahead has produced just under 10% annually and made money more than 85% of the time in the last 30 years, between 1984 and 2013. In fact, when the market was down 37% in 2008, his portfolio model was down only 3.93%. I sure wish I had known this back then. Or how about David Swensen, the man who took Yale's endowment from $1 billion to more than $23.9 billion while averaging 14% annually? He too shared his ideal allocation for you in the pages ahead. Priceless information all captured in Section 6, Invest Like the 0.001%, The Billionaire's Playbook. So if you look at these experts' models without fully understanding asset allocation, it's like building a house on a weak foundation. Or if you focus on asset allocation before knowing your goals, it will be a complete waste of time. And maybe most importantly, if we don't protect you from the people looking to take a good chunk of your wealth, all is lost. That's why we are uncovering the 9 myths step 2 in our 7 simple steps to financial freedom so that you become an insider. So that you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. It pays to be a star. Even after everything we have showed you about actively managed mutual funds, there are undoubtedly those who will say, Tony, I have done my research, and not to worry. I only invest in 5-star funds, nothing less. Oh, really? According to Morningstar, over the decade ending December 2009, roughly 72% of all fund deposits, about $2 trillion, flowed to 4- and 5-star funds. For those who aren't familiar, Morningstar is the most popular and thorough service for evaluating mutual funds, and they apply a 5-star ranking system to their past performance. Brokers are starry-eyed as they share with you the next hot fund. David Swensen told me that the stars are so important that mutual fund companies are quick to eliminate funds which fall below the 4-star threshold. For the 5-year period ending in 2012, 27% of domestic equity funds and 23% of international equity funds were either merged or liquidated, a common practice to eliminate a poor track record from a family of funds. It's routine for mutual fund companies to set up multiple new funds to see which one is hot and euthanize the others. As Jack Bogle explains, a firm will go out and start 5 incubation funds, and they will try and shoot the lights out with all five of them. And of course they don't with four of them, but they do with one. So they drop the other four and take the one that did very well public with a great track record and sell the track record. Imagine we could adopt this practice in our own investing life. What if you could pick five stocks and if four went down and only one went up, you could pretend all your losers didn't happen. And then tell your friends that you are the hottest stock picker since Warren Buffett. In addition, the lackluster performance of these 4- and 5-star supernovas, dying stars, is well researched in a Wall Street Journal article entitled Investors Caught with Stars in Their Eyes. A study was done in which the researchers went back to 1999 and studied the 10-year subsequent performance of those who bought 5-star funds. Their findings? Of the 248 mutual stock funds with 5-star ratings at the start of the period, just 4 still kept that rank after 10 years. How many times have you picked a shooting star only to watch it burn out? We all have at some point. And here we see that it's because we had less than 2% odds that the shooting star wouldn't fizzle into darkness. We all want the guy with the hot hand, but history tells us that it's the hot hand that will inevitably turn cold. Isn't that why Vegas always wins? An insider knows that chasing the high flyer is chasing the wind. But it's human nature to chase performance. It's almost irresistible. Yet the herd mentality quite literally results in financial destruction for millions of families, and I know that if you are reading this book, you are not willing to fall victim any longer. You're becoming an insider now. And what other cool strategies do insiders use? Let's find out. Upside with protection. In the past 100 years, the market was up approximately 70% of the time. But that leaves 30% of the time that the market was down. So while investing in the indexes is a great solution for a portion of your money, it shouldn't be for all of your money. Markets are volatile at times, so it only makes sense that you will want to protect a portion of your portfolio if or when the markets take another big dive. Heck, there have been 250% hits since 2000. One exciting strategy we will introduce allows us to make money when the market index goes up, yet it simultaneously guarantees that we will not lose our original investment if the market goes down. The catch? You don't get to capture or participate in all of the gains. Most are in disbelief when I explain that there are tools out there that can guarantee that you don't lose while still giving you the ability to participate in market wins. Why haven't you heard of them? Because they are typically reserved for high net worth clients. I will show you one of the only places where the average investor can access these. Imagine your friends with their baffled and even suspicious looks when you tell them you make money when the market goes up, but don't lose money when it goes down. This strategy alone can completely change the way you feel about investing. It's your safety rope while climbing the mountain when everyone else is white-knuckling it with hope. Imagine the feeling of certainty, of peace of mind, knowing that you aren't at risk. How would this change your life? How would you feel when you open up your monthly statements? Would you be gritting your teeth or feel calm and collected? We've only scratched the surface of the incredible insights and tools that lay ahead, so you must stay tuned. But for now, we can remember the following. Stocks have by far been the best place to be for long-term growth over time. Stocks are volatile. In the pages ahead, you will learn from the market masters how to smooth out the ride by investing in and diversifying across multiple different indexes. Don't be sold that someone is going to beat the market. Instead, align yourself with the market. Once you put your indexing plan in place, which we will do step by step, you won't have to spend your time trying to pick which stock to buy because the index will have done it for you. This will save you a tremendous amount of time and angst in trying to pick a winner. Begin to think like an insider. Never again will you tolerate the herd mentality in your own life. Fees on fees. By tapping into the power of indexing, by passively owning the market, you are also combating our second myth. Nearly every person I ask doesn't know exactly how much he or she pays in fees. I'll admit, I also didn't know at one stage in my life. The fee factories have become masterful at either hiding the fees or making them appear negligible. Negligible. No big deal. Nothing could be further from the truth. When climbing the mountain of financial freedom, you will need every bit of forward progress to succeed. You can't afford to take two steps forward and one step back by letting excessive fees drain your account. So the real question is, are you funding your retirement or someone else's? Turn the page now and find out. Chapter 2.2. Myth 2, are fees? They're a small price to pay. The mutual fund industry is now the world's largest skimming operation, a $7 trillion trough from which fund managers, brokers, and other insiders are steadily siphoning off an excessive slice of the nation's household, college, and retirement savings. Senator Peter Fitzgerald. Insult to injury. Nothing is more infuriating than to be told one price, but then realize that you are paying another. You agree on the price of a new car, but when it comes down to signing the documents, a couple thousand in fees magically appear. Or you check out of a hotel and discover an additional resort fee, a tourism tax, a wireless internet fee, fees for towels, you get the point. It's frustrating. We feel trapped. We feel snowed. Strong-armed or simply deceived into paying more than we should. With the help of fine print, the $13 trillion mutual fund industry is hands down the most masterful in the craft of hiding fees. In a Forbes article entitled The Real Cost of Owning a Mutual Fund, Tybernick peels back the layers to dissect the actual cost and arrives at a heart-stopping total. The average cost of owning a mutual fund is 3.17% per year. If 3.17% doesn't sound like a big number to you, think of it in light of what we just learned about becoming or owning the market. For example, you can own the entire market, let's say all 500 stocks in the S&P 500, for as little as 0.14%, or as the investment world calls it, 14 basis points, BPS. That's just 14 cents for every $100 you invest. Just a quick FYI for you insiders, there are 100 basis points in 1%, so 50 basis points is 0.5% and so on. Owning the entire market is accomplished through a low-cost index fund such as those offered through Vanguard or Dimensional Fund Advisors. And we already know that owning the market beats 96% of all the mutual fund stock pickers over a sustained period. Sure, you might be willing to pay 3% to an extraordinary hedge fund manager like Ray Dalio, who has a 21% annualized return, before fees, since launching his fund. But with most mutual funds, we are paying nearly 30 times, or 3,000%, more in fees, and for what? Inferior performance. Can you imagine paying 30 times more for the same type of car your neighbor owns, and it goes only 25 miles per hour to boot? This is exactly what is happening today. Two neighbors are both invested in the market, but one is shelling out fistfuls of cash each year, while the other is paying pennies on the dollar. Same returns, different results, the cost of ignorance. Three childhood friends, Jason, Matthew, and Taylor, at age 35, all have $100,000 to invest. Each selects a different mutual fund, and all three are lucky enough to have equal performance in the market of 7% annually. At age 65, they get together to compare account balances. On deeper inspection, they realize that the fees they have been paying are drastically different from one another. They are paying annual fees of 1%, 2%, and 3% respectively. Below is the impact of fees on their ending account balance. Jason, $100,000 growing at 7%, minus 3% in annual fees, equals $324,340. Matthew, $100,000 growing at 7%, minus 2% in annual fees, equals $432,194. And Taylor, $100,000 growing at 7%, minus 1% in annual fees, equals $574,349. Same investment amount, same returns, and Taylor has nearly twice as much money as her friend Jason. Which horse do you bet on? The one with the 100-pound jockey or the 300-pound jockey? Just 1% here, 1% there. Doesn't sound like much, but compounded over time, It could be the difference between your money lasting your entire life or surviving on government or family assistance. It's the difference between teeth-clenching anxiety about your bills or peace of mind to live as you wish and enjoy life. Practically, it can often mean working a full decade longer before you can have the freedom to quit working if you choose to. As Jack Bogle has shown us, by paying excessive fees, you are giving up 50% to 70% of your future nest egg. Now, the example above is hypothetical, so let's get a bit more real. Between January 1, 2000, and December 31, 2012, the S&P 500 was flat. No returns. This period includes what is often called the lost decade because most people made no progress, but still endured massive volatility with the run-up through 2007, the free fall in 2008, and the bull market run that began in 2009. So let's say you had your life savings of $100,000 invested. And if you simply owned or mimicked the market during this 12-year period, your account was flat and your fees were minimal. But if you paid the 3.1% in average annual fees, and assuming your mutual fund manager could even match the market, you would have paid over $30,000 in fees. So your account was down 40%, only $60,000 left, but the market was flat. You put up the capital, you took all the risk, and they made money no matter what happened. I am smarter than that. Now, you might be reading along and thinking, Tony, I am smarter than that. I looked at the expense ratio of my mutual funds, and it's only 1%. Heck, I even have some no-load mutual funds. Well, I have some swampland in Florida to sell you. In all seriousness, this is the exact conclusion they want you to arrive at. Like the sleight-of-hand magician, the mutual fund companies use the oldest trick in the book, misdirection. They want us to focus on the wrong object while they subtly remove our watch. The expense ratio is the sticker price most commonly reported in the marketing materials. But it certainly doesn't tell the whole story. And let me be the first to confess that at one stage in my life, I thought I was investing intelligently, and I own my share of the top 5-star actively managed mutual funds. I had done my homework. Looked at the expense ratios. Consulted a broker. But like you, I am busy making a living and taking care of my family. I didn't have the time to sit down and read 50 pages of disclosures. The laundry list of fees is shrouded within the fine print. It takes a PhD in economics to figure it out. PhD in fees. Just after the 2008 crash, Robert Hilton Smith graduated with a PhD in economics and decided to take a job with policy think tank Demos. And like all of us, nothing he learned in college would prepare him for how to create a successful investment strategy. So, like most, he started making dutiful contributions to his 401k. But even though the market was rising, his account would rarely rise with it. He knew something was wrong, so he decided to take it on as a research project for work. First, he started by reading the 50-plus page prospectus of each of the 20 funds he invested in. Incredibly boring and dry legalese designed to be, in Hilton Smith's words, very opaque. Five, there was language he couldn't decipher, acronyms he hadn't a clue what they stood for, and, most importantly, a catalog of 17 different fees that were being charged. There were also additional costs that weren't direct fees per se, but were passed on to and paid for by the investors nonetheless. To better shroud the fees, Wall Street and the vast majority of 401k plan providers have come up with some pretty diverse and confusing terminology. Asset management fees, 12b1 fees/marketing fees, trading costs, brokerage commissions, spread costs, market impact costs, soft dollar costs, redemption fees, account fees, purchase fees, record-keeping fees, plan administrative fees, and on and on. Call them what you want. They all cost you money. They all pull you backward down the mountain. After a solid month of research, Hilton Smith came to the conclusion that there wasn't a chance in hell that his 401k account would flourish with these excessive and hidden fees acting as a hole in his boat. In his report, titled The Retirement Savings Drain, The Hidden and Excessive Costs of 401k's, he calculated that the average worker will lose $154,794 to 401k fees over his lifetime, based on annual income of approximately $30,000 per year and saving 5% of his income each year. A higher income worker, making approximately $90,000 per year, will lose upward of $277,000 in fees in his/her lifetime. Hilton Smith and Demos have done a great social good in exposing the tyranny of compounding costs. Costs. Death by a thousand cuts. In ancient China, death by a thousand cuts was the cruelest form of torture because of how long the process took to kill the victim. Today the victim is the American investor, and the proverbial blade is the excessive fees that slowly but surely bleed the investor dry. David Swensen is the chief investment officer of Yale's endowment. He has grown the fund from $1 billion to more than $23.9 billion, and he is considered to be the Warren Buffett of institutional investing. When I sat down with him in his Yale office, I was enlightened yet angered when he shared the real truth regarding the fee factories that are slaughtering Americans. David shared, overwhelmingly, mutual funds extract enormous sums from investors in exchange for providing a shocking disservice. Later in the book, we will sit down and look over David's shoulder at his portfolio recommendations, but it doesn't matter how great your strategy is if excessive fees are eroding the path beneath your feet. The asset gathering complex and the actively managed mutual funds they peddle are, for the most part, a disastrous social experiment that began with the advent of the 401k in the early 80s. The 401k was not a bad concept. It was a good idea for those who wanted to put extra money away. But it was just meant to be a supplement to a traditional pension plan. Today there is over $13 trillion in managed mutual funds, much of which is held in retirement accounts such as 401ks and IRAs. They were supposed to get us to our retirement goals. They were supposed to beat the market. But not only do they rarely beat the market, a significant majority are charging astronomical fees for their mediocrity. The aggregate of these fees will ultimately cost tens of millions of people their quality of life and could very well be the number one danger and destroyer of your financial freedom. Sound like an overstatement? Jack Bogle, founder of Vanguard, says, "I think high costs, eroding already lower returns, are as much of a risk for investors as the economic situation in Europe or China. It gets worse. So let's recap. Not only will the vast majority, 96%, of actively managed mutual funds not beat the market, they are going to charge us an arm and leg and extract up to two-thirds of our potential nest egg in fees. But here is the kicker, they are going to have the nerve to look you in the eye and tell you that they truly have your best interests at heart while simultaneously lobbying Congress to make sure that is never the case. The truth/solution. First, you need to know how much you are paying. I recommend visiting the investment software website Personal Fund for its cost calculator, which analyzes each of your funds and looks beyond just the expense ratio to the additional costs as well. Keep in mind, these calculators can only estimate the fees. They can't take into account other costs, such as taxes, because each person's tax bracket may differ. You may also own the mutual fund inside your 401k, in which you won't be paying taxes on the growth, but instead will be paying a plan administrator. Some 401k plans are low cost, while others are hefty with expenses. The average plan administrator charges 1.3% to 1.5% annually, according to the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office. That's $1,300 for every $100,000 just to participate in the 401k. So when you add this 1.3% for the plan administration to the total mutual fund costs of 3.17%, it can actually be more expensive to own a fund in a tax-free account when compared with a taxable account, a whopping total of 4.47% to 4.67% per year. Think about it, you are saving 10%, but half of it is being paid in fees. How insane is that? But as you learn here, you don't have to be caught in this trap. By becoming an insider, you can put a stop to this thievery today. Fees this high are the equivalent of climbing Everest in flip-flops and a tank top. You were dead before you got started. Add them up. Up. Non-taxable account, taxable account expense ratio, 0.9% expense ratio, 0.9% transaction costs, 1.44% transaction costs, 1.44% cash drag, 0.83% cash drag, 0.83% tax cost, 1% total costs, 3.17% total costs, 4.17% the real cost of owning a mutual fund, Forbes, April 4, 2011. Escape. To escape the fee factories, you must lower your total annual fees and associated investment costs to 1.25% or less on average. This means the cost of the advice, a registered investment advisor to help you allocate appropriately, rebalance your portfolio periodically, and so on, plus the cost of the investments should ideally be 1.25% or less. For example, you might be paying 1% or less to the registered investment advisor and 0.2% for low-cost index funds like those offered through Vanguard for a total of 1.2%. And the 1% paid to the advisor as a fee can be tax deductible. Which means your net out-of-pocket cost is close to half, depending on your tax bracket. Most Americans use a typical broker where the commissions aren't deductible, nor are those expensive fees the mutual fund charges. We will discuss the difference between a broker and a registered investment advisor shortly. You don't want to miss this one. In Section 3, we will show you step by step how to dramatically reduce your fees and legally reduce your taxes. And all that money you save will accelerate your path to financial freedom. Never again. Now that you know how the game is played, now that you have looked behind the curtain, make the decision that you will never be taken advantage of again. Resolve right now that you'll never again be one of the many. You're becoming an insider now. You are the chess player, not the chess piece. Knowledge is power, but execution trumps knowledge, so it's what you do from here that will matter. Yes, I will show you exactly how to reduce your fees, but you must decide to take the necessary action. You must declare that you will never again pay insane fees for subpar performance. And if this book can save you 2% to 3% per year in unnecessary fees, we just put hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even millions, back in your pocket. Said another way, this could get you to your goal that much quicker and save you 5 to 15 years of accumulation time so that you can retire sooner if you so choose. By simply removing expensive mutual funds from your life and replacing them with low-cost index funds, you will have made a major step in recouping up to 70% of your potential future nest egg. How exciting! What will that mean for you and your family? Vanguard has an entire suite of low-cost index funds, across multiple different types of asset classes, that range between 0.05% and 0.25% per year in total all-in costs. Dimensional Funds is another great low-cost index fund provider. If you don't have access to these low-cost providers in your 401k, we will show you how to make that happen. And while low-cost index funds are crucial, determining how much of each index fund to buy, and how to manage the entire portfolio over time, are the keys to success. We will cover that in the pages ahead. Now that you have resolved to take action, to whom do you turn? Who do you trust as a guide? Going back to your broker to help you save on fees is like going to your pharmacist to help you get off meds. How do you find conflict-free advice? And how do you know that the guidance you're getting isn't in the best interest of the person on the other side of the desk? Turn the page to uncover myth 3, and let's get answers to these pressing questions. Break it down. If you really want to know how badly you're being abused through hidden fees, take a moment and review a sample list below of some of the core fees and costs that impact your mutual fund investments. Breakout of fees. 1. Expense ratio. This expense is the main price tag, the number they want us focused on. But it certainly doesn't tell the whole story. According to Morningstar, U.S. stock funds pay an average of 1.31% of assets each year to the fund company for portfolio management and operating expenses such as marketing, 12b1 fees, distribution, and administration. Many of the larger funds have realized that a 1% ballpark expense ratio is where they want to come in so that investors don't flinch and brokers have a good story to sell, I mean, tell. 2. Transaction costs. Transaction costs are a broad, sweeping category and can be broken down further into categories such as brokerage commissions, market impact costs, the cost of moving the market as mutual funds trade massive market moving positions, and spread costs, the difference between the bid and ask or the buy and sell price of a stock. A 2006 study by business school professors Roger Edelin, Richard Evans, and Gregory Cadleck found that U.S. stock mutual funds average 1.44% in transaction costs per year. This means that these transaction costs are perhaps the most expensive component of owning a mutual fund, but the industry has deemed it too tough to quantify, and thus it goes unreported in the brochures. 3. Tax costs, or 401k costs.